In a second, we're going to hear about a patient who actually got it. So we'll see what happened with that patient. But I want to get more, though, into the treatment that this patient we're about to hear about actually received, because it's a fairly new treatment. And the answer to this question is because in the past, I think, and still now, a very common first-line treatment for FL when the patient becomes symptomatic is bendamustine or rituximab. But what we saw is another trial, we're going through a trial that compared a non-chemotherapy regimen, lenalidomide rituximab, the so-called R-squared regimen. And we'll talk a little bit about the tolerability issues with BR versus so-called R-squared and whether or not you have less toxicity because you're not having chemotherapy. Mike, can you kind of walk through a little bit how they looked at R-squared and what they saw there in this really important study?
Yeah, so there was data in the relapse setting for follicular lymphoma that rituximab and lenalidomide gave a very good response rate, and there's preclinical rationale for that. The drugs in combination enhance the immunotherapy effect of rituximab, and so the combination of lenalidomide and rituximab was used through several induction cycles and then to a somewhat lower dose, longer-term follow-up. Compared with standard bendamustine rituximab for six cycles. And it turned out in the frontline setting that the benda-ritux responses were about the same, really equivalent to R-squared. So different side effect profile, somewhat less cytopenia, a little bit more rash and things in the lenalidomide arm. So it gives you the opportunity, instead of having patients coming in for chemotherapy infusions, they can get rituximab, like Craig. We often try to switch people over to the sub-Q rituximab after their first infusion is well tolerated, and then it's a quicker treatment. The lenalidomide, of course, is oral, so it's a pretty user-friendly regimen from an administration standpoint.
You know, Molly, I was really surprised because when this trial came out, I guess it was about 2 years ago, and we were anticipating it. We were hearing about this non-chemotherapy alternative. Then it comes out, looks just the same as BR, but not everybody started using it. And even now, I would say, you know, lots of people are getting BR, others are maybe not even as many getting R-squared. And a lot of debate about, is it easier to get BR and maybe not have any maintenance afterwards? Any thoughts about this R-squared regimen, Molly? I guess a lot of people bring up the issue, now you have lenalidomide to deal with. These people often have had or are going to get rituximab. Any comments, Molly?
I think it's a mixed bag. I think that's the interesting part of follicular lymphoma is that there are so many options for therapy. In the two physicians that I work with, one leans towards lenalidomide rituximab because it does seem to be a bit better tolerated. And like you said, there is a bit different side effect profile and then an awful lot of fatigue. Right, people on lenalidomide, they get kind of draggy and you have to keep dose reducing and you need to do that. You need to monitor them very closely. A lot of times as you get far out into these regimens, the fatigue and general feeling of malaise is really what limits how much of the lenalidomide you can have a patient take, that what they can tolerate. And then again, some of the dings to their counts too. I think there are people who want to get everything over with. 6 months, 2 days a month, get in and get out, get their BR regimen through with its minimal amount of side effects as well, or its different set of side effects. But there's a lot of neutropenia and a lot of risk for infection in that. So I tend to see more of the oral therapies in general, and adding rituximab in is certainly what seems to be the front runner now is the R-squared therapy.
So if you see in your slides, you'll see there's a trial looking at lenalidomide rituximab second line, which people who don't get it first line, I think typically will get it second line. Craig, I'm curious on your take on this. You know, when the data first came out, the lymphoma people were saying, oh, you know, it's kind of challenging to give lenalidomide, et cetera. And then the general oncologists were saying, hey, we give lenalidomide like water for myeloma. We give it for years and we know how to use it. And you have to try to prevent some of those GI problems, et cetera. Craig, any comments on tolerability, BR versus R-squared?
I mean, for me and my patients, BR is much better tolerated. I think that exactly what Molly said, there is tremendous fatigue with lenalidomide. I reserve it for first relapse, which I give it quite a bit. It's an unfortunate study, maybe not the best written study, which is why there was no winner take all on that particular protocol. physicians are very comfortable giving bendamustine or rituximab. We can give it to people who are 90 and older. So I must say I give BR first and hold R squared.
So we're going to talk about, in terms of themes in oncology, the theme of choosing between similar options is one that goes through oncology. That is the art of oncology. We're going to hear about a case in a second of a patient who got R squared, but also got a PI3 kinase inhibitor. I just want to mention quickly, this is a new class of drugs being used. Kind of curious, Mike, what your thoughts are about it. There are now three. You know, this is oncology now. You have new drugs, and now you have three of them all of a sudden. Mike, any comments about these three agents, how efficacious they are, and how you choose among them?
Yeah, so the B-cell receptor pathway, it's a signaling pathway that's activated in most B-cell malignancies. And we now have this whole family of drugs that target that pathway. So the PI3 kinase inhibitors are among that list. And so the slide you just saw with the three drugs, idelalisib, copanlisib, and duvelisib, the slide's not up for me right now, but there were some highlights on there that were noted in red. And you can see the two of them are oral, one is IV. Response rates are pretty comparable. Side effect profile differs a bit across them. There are some class effects, one of which is a concerning toxicity that people who use these are well aware of, and that is that you can see autoimmune side effects that can be delayed until several months into treatment, where they may get, as you can see there on the bottom, a true inflammatory ulcerative colitis type illness. You can see pulmonary inflammation or pneumonitis, and sometimes elevated liver enzymes. So they have different side effect profiles, but you can see here in the results, response rates are reasonable. Complete remissions are pretty unusual, and the durability is not as good as some of the other classes of targeted B-cell receptor pathway inhibitors, but they're active agents. We tend to use nowadays, I think idelalisib is used less because of potentially more propensity to cause some of the inflammatory states that I mentioned, colitis and pneumonitis. So they're important agents for relapsed follicular, not a home run, but useful, and some patients will get meaningful responses from them.
So we're going to finish out the segment on FL by hearing about this patient of Kim's, the 75-year-old. You already referred to her, the fact that she was observed for many years before she required treatment. And when she got treatment, first she got rituximab earlier on, and then later on, or she got R-CHOP, she got R-squared. Maybe you just focus on what happened to her, Kim, when she got the R-squared.
She actually tolerated lenalidomide very well. Initially, though, she had a lot of GI upsets. And once we decreased the dose to 10 milligrams, she has had no further issues. I will say up front, she had a lot of fatigue initially as well. And this is a very active woman. She runs her business, she golfs, and she's a very difficult woman to sit down. And so it was a little bit of a change. Plus, she hadn't been treated for 6 years. She definitely has had a nice response. So she relapsed last July, and that was the initial appearance of the mass. And then this was November. So it's still present, but a lot less. And then we just restaged her this past month, and she continues to have shrinkage in that mass. I didn't have the most recent scan because or had already submitted the film. She's one that does get the rituximab sub-Q. It's more convenient for her. And as of right now, she doesn't have any particular side effects other than mild fatigue. I have to remind her to slow it down a little bit and rest because, like I said, she's one to overdo it. There was a question on there about the financial toxicity of Revlimid or lenalidomide. I think that's one of the biggest challenges we all have with these oral drugs is the cost. And the newer drugs, we can get a lot of grants and stuff for them to help offset the copay. But I think is a factor in treating people is whether or not we can get the lenalidomide at a reasonable cost for them, if what the insurance will cover. So we do focus a lot on that when we decide how we're going to treat patients. But that's something that we, as we all know, we can't lose sight of the cost to the patient. But overall, she's tolerating the treatment well. She's not having any untoward side effects at this point.
So we're going to move on in a second, talk about mantle cell lymphoma. I just want to show you one scan. We were talking before about the PI3 kinase inhibitors. And Kim, we were going to talk about your 85-year-old man. And you, where the X is, as I should have mentioned before, is where the tumor is. But without getting into detail, you can see here this patient had a good response. So it can occur with these agents, even though they're used pretty late on.